Arash Madani of Sportsnet joins us here this morning. Thanks for doing this, my friend. I know you've been taking a daily 90-minute walk. Is that a morning walk for you? Is that later in the day? Have you already gotten outside?
It just depends on the day. Not yet. I'm actually going to head out here in a couple hours.
Well, I'm glad you're safe and healthy at this time. Everything's going okay?
Everything's great, Scotty. How are you holding up?
Yeah, we're holding up just fine. Thank you. My family and I are safe and healthy, and really that's all that matters. Excellent report from you, of an incredibly detailed report from you as well over the last 24 hours, Arash, on what the CFL is looking at right now. In reading your report, all I was left with thinking is, man, there are so many things to consider and so many people involved. I'm just not sure from a health and safety standpoint how this league attempts to pull this off this year.
Well, not just health and safety, just logistically, Scotty. Like, every day, if you want to go through that, is that really feasible? Is that something that can actually be executed? And, you know, when a lot of players are arriving at the same time, you know, once they go through it a few times, the complacency part of it, you know, the quarantine part of keeping guys in for 14 days, the expense that goes with that. Can you really, in a football locker room, only have two or three players in a weight room? What about the showers? What about the locker room itself? What about the meeting rooms and the physical distancing? You know, it's such a massive undertaking that medically you have found a scientific solution that could work, but in practicality, can it? And in, you know, financially, is it feasible? And just to make this work, can you do it? Those are a lot of real questions that need answering.
Well, and the big one you brought up at the end there is it financially feasible? We know for other leagues why it's financially feasible and why it makes sense economically to try to get the NHL or NBA or Major League Baseball back up and running. But from a CFL standpoint, in such a gate-driven league where the television contract is nothing like it is in other sports, Arash, do you see any scenario where economically it makes sense to proceed this year?
Economically, look, what they're trying to figure out is, can they make this work to lose less money? That's fundamentally it. And I think, Scotty, that they have a hope and a belief and a thought that maybe they could get into a scenario by the fall where you might be able to get 5,000 people in the building, and that generates some revenue. But there's a lot of ifs and maybes and coulds and perhapses in that conversation. So, you know, when you look at it, you say, all right, we could generate revenue based on 8 or 9 or 10 games per team from the television contract. Yes. How much will it cost, though, to get us onto the field? The other thing that I've been told, and I didn't report this, and I think it's an interesting part of the equation, is there has been talk, whereas, you know, they talk about player safety being important long before COVID, because football is such a violent game. They had done the extra bye week. They had talked about having more days in between games for recovery. There's now talk of doing a more condensed schedule. Because you're not playing 18 games, because you'd be playing half of that, maybe you could play a game, for instance, on a Sunday and then a Thursday, and try and get more games within the calendar. That's another thing that's being discussed. So the financial question, can they make it work? Probably not, but they're going to exhaust all the avenues to see if they can. That's the best way, I guess, I can put it.
Arash Madani of Sportsnet joining me here on the Scott Rintoul Show this morning. And Arash, you know how much I love the CFL. I know how much it's in your blood as well. And so both
of us. I can hear it in your voice, Scotty. Like, you got a little pep in your step just talking football again.
Well, here's the thing. You and I both want the best for the league moving forward. And this
is. And we both want to see football.
Yeah, and this has been a league that has been a great product but has been mismanaged for as long as you and I have been alive. At least that's the way it's felt.
Correct.
There is a big part of me, Arash, that feels not having CFL football this year will lead to a brighter future because it will force this league to reexamine its economic model. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree. I agree. I think taking a step back this year is good on a lot of levels. One, you're not trying to put a square peg into a round hole. What you're at, look, you're asking a lot of people who are not qualified to try and pull off something in a very condensed period of time that ultimately could end up being dangerous. You know, the football people are, look, we all have to adapt. I get that's the new normal. But when you're talking about health, when you're talking about testing, when you're talking about safety protocols, there's a lot here. And yes, at the same time, the economic model is broken. You know, for the longest time, because of the, let's be honest, Scott, because of the insecurity complex so many have around the league, they've tried to present it to be something it's not economically. Well, just tell us what it is. That's fine. And then look to get better. And the one solution through all of this that the new commissioner has come up with is forcing international players onto rosters, believing that that will drive international television revenue. So take a look at what you have and say, okay, let's take a break. Let's take a step back. Yes, I understand it's going to cost organizations some money. But if you can get any kind of government funding, and I don't believe the feds, you know, just that one department is going to come through with the money they're hoping for. It may have to come from some different areas. Really examine who and what you are. And you know what, Scott? This is the issue. The league office itself has to look in the mirror, and the owners and governors have to look in the mirror. Because when you think about all the sunken costs and all the wasted costs in those organizations, look in your own backyard. The BC Lions are paying Devon Claybrooks how much not to work. The Hamilton Tiger Cats over the years have paid how many GMs and coaches not to work. So that, you know, they have to look in the mirror first before looking at anybody else to try and figure out their finances and get their house in order.
Couldn't agree with you more, Arash. And as I've talked to CFL fans about this online over the last couple of days, I've had the common question come back. Well, how can they really expand their revenue streams? There's people coming into stadiums and there's a television contract. I don't see much else for this particular league. It's not just about that. It's about exactly what you just mentioned. It's about the numerous cost inefficiencies. And to me, the greater problem with the CFL is the lack of cohesion between teams and the lack of a better agreement between the players and the league and the teams themselves. And unless they come to a better point where everybody involved says, what do we want here? Do we want strong franchises or do we want a strong league? And if that is not at the forefront of every discussion, this is going to be a Band-Aid after Band-Aid solution.
And look, the CFL is not alone in this. You know, I think this is a time where all organizations have to take stock. Let's take Tennis Canada as an example. Tennis Canada, 90% of its revenues come from hosting the two Rogers Cup events every year, the two tennis tournaments in Montreal and Toronto. Well, one thing happens, and these tournaments get postponed for a year or canceled for a year, 90% of its revenues are gone. I mean, think about it from this perspective for yourself, Scott, and anybody listening. If you're going to be an investor of any kind, beginner, intermediate, advanced, are you putting all your eggs into two stocks, or are you going to be as diversified as you can? For so long, pro sports leagues, national sports organizations have gotten away with putting all their eggs in a basket or two and nothing else. And while I give Randy Ambrosi credit for trying to look elsewhere and trying to look globally, that's great, but the solution to it is not forcing international players onto rosters to make it an inferior product and make the on-field product more dangerous because they're just not ready. So yes, grow it, try and grow it internationally. That's great. That's another idea. But not just that. Effectively, they've taken gate revenues and TV revenues and added the international element and nothing else and feel a third one is enough. It's not. It has to come from so many different areas because once one of them is taken away from you, you're not going to completely collapse. You're not going to fall on your face. You may stumble for a minute, Scott, but then you can get your footing back. And what we've discovered now across sports and in the Canadian Football League is they have completely fallen over and they don't know how to get up.
Wally Buono, who is now out of the game but was a staple for so long, certainly in the last few years of his career, would always say this to me, Arash, and I'm sure he said it to you as well. Look, at some point we can worry about what's best for the BC Lions, but We got to worry about what's best for the league. You've worked on the organizational side of things. Why has this league for so long operated so insularly, in such an insular fashion, I should say, from an organization standpoint, instead of collectively?
Because it's for a couple of reasons. When you're a gate-driven league, all you care about is your own backyard. You want to make sure your stadium is full. You want to make sure your finances are in order. I mean, Scott, let's think about this. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers just won the Grey Cup for the first time in a generation. What was it, almost 30 years this past year? They sold almost $2 million more in merchandise because of that championship win, maybe $1.5 million. That's a stadium that's pretty packed. It's a brand new building, and it's one of the nicest in the league. Everything fell into place for that organization. And their take-home profit after paying everything off was $588,000. So the reason, if you're in Winnipeg or any of these organizations, the reason why you're not taking a look at the collective is because you're spending so much time making sure your own backyard is taken care of that you couldn't, your concern is not what's happening in Hamilton, because you're trying to make sure that your house is in order. And so that's a big part of it. The other, quite frankly, Scott, is that it's a ass-covering exercise here. That everybody who is employed in pro sports is making sure that they're taking care of themselves, because they're trying to keep their job and their stature and their and where they are in the pecking order. So they're making sure they're taken care of. And inherently, it's competition. It's competitive. You're trying to beat the other person. And when you're trying to beat the other person, there's this idea that it's a perceived advantage if you're going to lend a hand rather than give them the proverbial stiff arm.
In conversation with Arash Madani this morning on Sportsnet 650, do you see any way this league prospers long-term without some sort of revenue-sharing model between teams and also a revenue-sharing plan with players?
I don't know how to answer that question, because it depends on where the revenues are coming from. If your revenues are based on the present model, I think you're just recycling the whole thing. It's the spin cycle in the washer. But I think the biggest issue here, Scott, is that the league has shown no interest in partnering with the players. They do not value the players. And we've seen that in collective bargaining, and we even saw that in the early stages of the COVID crisis. And it wasn't until Randy Ambrosi had egg on his face after presenting to the House of Commons Standing Committee on Finance, asking for up to $150 million, and they said, okay, great, where are the players? How much are the players getting? And he didn't have an answer for it. And only then did he realize, oh, man, we have to get them involved. The league's governors and the league itself has shown that they don't value the players and your stakeholders. When fans buy tickets, they're not coming to watch the governors. They're coming to watch the guys play. They need to have the players as a legitimate partner to make this thing work. And until that's not done, and until you don't have new revenue streams, you're not going to move forward. It has to be an actual partnership. I get that there's acrimony with the NHL and NHLPA. I get there's acrimony with the MLB and its Players Association. There is an inherent conflict all the time. But when the CFL's economics are so small and the margin for error is so little, as we're discovering now, this is why it's so paramount that you're even more of a partner than any other league.
Completely agree with you. And in today's economic model in pro sports to begin with, it's quite frankly foolhardy to move ahead without some sort of agreement between the two. Arash Madani in conversation with us here for a couple more minutes on Sportsnet 650. I wanted to get your thoughts on Jerry Sloan passes away today at the age of 78, and maybe what he symbolized, certainly to me and maybe other sports fans, not just Jerry Sloan, but the era he came from, Arash. I mean, he was synonymous with the Utah Jazz, and whether you like that team or not, there was universal respect for the coach that was Jerry Sloan and the person that was Jerry Sloan.
He was a hell of a player, too. Don't forget that. Before he became a coach, that dude could ball way back when. And Jerry Sloan was one of the old school guys, man. Like, he was You know, at a time where Pat Riley was wearing the slick Armani suits, Jerry Sloan would kind of sit at a practice with a John Deere hat on and his legs crossed in jeans, and you almost figured he'd rather be sitting on a ride-on lawnmower than in front of diva athletes. But Jerry Sloan believed in basketball, you know, as a pure sport, and he survived for so long. And I think we would discuss him so much differently if Utah had somehow in one of those 2 years gotten over the hump against Chicago. You know, we all just watched The Last Dance and how close the Jazz were, especially in 98. The conversation around Jerry Sloan is so much different today with the title, but he's a Hall of Famer, and he is so widely respected. And Scotty, I believe he was with the Jazz for more than 20 years. When's the last time a head coach in any pro sport has had that kind of longevity and that kind of tenure?
Yeah, Greg Popovich is coming up on it, but you're absolutely right. Is there a parallel to be drawn between Jerry Sloan and Marv Levy, perhaps?
Yeah, in part. The difference is Marv Levy was one era. Jerry Sloan transcended eras. You know, he lived the Converse Chuck Taylor era. He lived the short shorts era, and he got into the internet era, and he also was around for the social media era. So think of how different the leagues were in each of those times, and how different the personalities in the game were in each of those times, and how different the economics were in each of those times.
Yeah, it's a really good point, and that's why we bring you on, buddy. I always love the conversation. Keep up the great work. You're doing a fantastic job. I know it's not easy during these times, but you are certainly make it look that way with some of the stuff you've been coming out with, Arash. Thank you, my friend.
I appreciate that. Very kind of you, Scotty. Hope everyone out there is staying safe and healthy and sane, too, amidst all this.
You as well, my friend. Enjoy that walk today.
Okay, man. Thanks, bud.